Mr. Richards speaking. That's okay. Oh, okay. Oh, I thought you might have just stepped out to talk to a colleague or grab a coffee, or like you're all the any of the normal reasons to step out of your office. All good. Just a quick administrative thing, actually, in regards to the date that I forgot. I'm not quite sure how it is the hearings became locked in on Thursdays in the first place, but at this point, the timing has actually now aligned with the very end of my Centrelink fortnight. Yesterday and Thursday in a fortnight time is the second last day of my DSP fortnight, just before I get paid again on the Saturday. Technically, my pay is meant to. Technically, I get paid on the Monday, but the funds always come into my account on the Saturday. It's just, look, that's Services Australia for you. At this point, that's actually making it really difficult because by the second last day of the fortnight, I'm out of money, have been likely for days at that point, and I'm running out of food, tobacco, other stuff. I definitely don't have the money for a taxi, even though I can get it reimbursed from my NDIS plan afterwards by that point. So I'm only looking at the option of a bus, which is even more burdensome and lengthy on me. Like, do you think that I realize we've just asked the court to delay the hearing, but do you think that is this an aspect that the court would take into account? And do you like is there any reason why it's on the third? Has it just defaulted to being on the Thursday because it started on a Thursday or something? Or is there anything that just could be done about this, do you think? Because, because the other factor is with it being on Thursday, like every week that there's a hearing, it's hanging over my head all week until it happens, and then it wipes me out on the Thursday, which leaves me wiped out on the Friday, and it kind of feels like it wipes out my whole week because of that, because I get more and more stressed as the days leading up to it. If it was at like the nearer the start of the week, that wouldn't be a factor. And I don't even know whether this is something someone else would understand, or this is just, my neuroses that I have to deal with. But yeah, both of those, both of like the it being nearer the end of the week has been really difficult in a way that I hadn't even quite been able to articulate even in my own head until recently. And now it's like I think some of the hearings were in the first week of my Centrelink fortnight, and on some of those hearings I was able to get a taxi and get it reimbursed. But then it's unfortunately because of the delays recently, I guess it's just accidentally ended up in now the second week of the Centrelink fortnight and right at the end of that because it's near the end of the week. And I've just been thinking about that since it got delayed at or the last couple of days, sorry, and just thinking like, yeah, like that's actually like because that's just going to continue repeating now just because it's fallen into that pattern. I'm going to just keep struggling with that around stuff, and maybe there's not, maybe I don't need. Maybe that doesn't need to be quite as much of a burden on me, but I've got no idea whether there's some reason it has to be on the Thursdays because the court does different business on different days. Like, I don't know how any of this works. I didn't even know what I'm allowed to ask or not, and I'm reluctant to ever ask the court anything because I kind of feel like, so much of the time, like I tried making so many requests during the protection hearings, and they just all got ignored back then. They didn't care about whether I could attend a hearing or how I could attend it or any like anything like that. So I just feel like, like don't even try asking unless something's, critically vital. Yeah, I don't know. Is there anything you know about in terms of why the court schedules different things on different days that it can't be on a Monday or a Tuesday? I mean, is it do they separate things by like, people who are on bail or not, or like, I mean, I've got no idea how they divide stuff up, but they clearly divide stuff up in some manner. Am I and I and I'm categorized. No, that's the first I've heard to that. I've been told nothing, but I'm classified as family violence by this point, even though that's most people agree that that's a false technicality. But didn't you yourself say that the magistrate at the bail hearing took out a family violence protection order against me on behalf of the two housing staff who turn up for the inspection, and that that matter is just being adjourned until the criminal case is resolved, which means I have to then deal with that after all this is over still, and I don't even know what that involves. But didn't you yourself mention when we spoke in person that that was rather weird, and you weren't sure why the court had even done that? Because other people have raised the same thing. I mean, I have a piece of paperwork saying something like that. Look, this may be a case of the unclear communication and wording from the court, which they don't seem to ever make any effort to do anything about. And because, look, just because the federal 1992 Disability Anti-Discrimination Act has rarely been enforced since its existence doesn't mean it is unenforceable. It doesn't imply in law. But I realise that I'm going to have to go to a huge amount of effort to get anyone to recognise any of it in any genuine way at this point. But I've read that legislation through and through so many times. I'm positive that there are clear obligations on government, especially judicial bodies like the court, to take steps to make things like language information and other processes more accessible. And it's a failure of the Act to do nothing when they're aware that there's at least they should look at what they should do and what they could do, and it's not, the Act doesn't just cover specific acts of discrimination against someone. It covers a general obligation upon companies and especially government bodies to consider disability needs and accessibility in the first place. And when there is evidence of someone failing to do that entirely, that itself is a breach of the federal discrimination. But as far as I don't think that anyone's ever been actually prosecuted for that, and that's a travesty in itself. But this is why I'm going to keep bringing these issues up, because maybe this is confusion around the wording from the court and the paperwork, or maybe this is the fact that I really was not in a mentally, legally competent state on that day on the bail hearing, and no one ever gave me a clear explanation about, no one ever gave me any explanation about anything just about afterwards, other than wrong statements apparently from the first corrections officers I met with, saying, I couldn't even contact housing at all, no one could on my behalf, which is what ended up costing me my lawyer in part. There was a whole bunch of really specific statements and instructions given to me in that hearing. I don't know if I took any of it in properly, and I don't know what this comes down to, but one way or another, I don't even understand at this point what I'm allowed to do or not. So I'm having to default in all circumstances to basically nothing, because I can't take the risk of being locked up for 9 months. Even if I'm allowed to contact housing, how could I even take that risk at the moment, contacting them about, the aircon or something right now? If I accidentally say the F word, that's it, 9 months in jail. I don't know. Special interim order, special interim families. Look, there's been so many terms thrown around. It's like I'm a writer. I'm into, what annoys me so much is that I have a really good grasp around English, and yet because of my autism, I still have severe communication issues and disability factors. But I feel like I should be able to understand all this better, but it's the trauma of all of it. It means that I can't. It's actually harder for me to understand what should otherwise be like plain as day for me. And the endless amount of times I have asked the magistrate's court to speak to this disability liaison officer that supposedly exists, the public advocate last year spent like a year trying to get in contact with them themselves. As far as I can work out, that position is a ghost. Actually, there is someone you need to talk to in regards to the, is it in the public interest to continue this prosecution or not? But you're going to have to make requests through formal channels. So Courtney, I forget her last name off the top of my head, but I can look it up, who was working for the ACT Public Advocate's Office until about October or November last year. She moved to Sydney. I think she's working in government, New South Wales Government Aged Care or something up in Sydney these days. You'll have to contact the Public Advocate's Office to find out wherever she is and how to contact her these days, because obviously I've got none of that information. I wouldn't even try to find it. But you need to speak to her. She worked with me closely multiple days a week for like 9 months on end around the stuff with housing and particularly the court hearings with the protection order. And she appeared in court on my behalf multiple times during the protection order hearings and around my extreme health issues and struggles to participate in that. There's a whole bunch of stuff that she and only she could speak to, and especially in regards to the conduct, like she's the only other person apart from Julia Jones that housing admitted to both verbally and in writing that they had breached the protection order themselves multiple times last year. Okay, so there's vital information that only she has, some of which is not even in whatever written records that the Public Advocate's Office hold. So I'd like you to write to Public Advocate's Office and ask them for any and all records that they have relating to me and for how you would go about getting in contact with Courtney, who worked very closely with me last year. They'll obviously know exactly who she is, just from the first name, but I can get you the surname, and then contact her. Obviously, I don't need to speak to her. I'd like to, but don't want to in the respectful sense of, she's moved on working another job, all of that. I don't need to know her contact details or anything like that, but you very much need to speak to her. And I think she can provide a very high level of detail in terms of, was it even in the interest to charge me in the first place, let alone prosecute me at this point? If Julie is not going to be able to, not going to verify a bunch of information, then Courtney is actually the other person who can. And because her position was in the ACT Government Public Advocate's Office, I presume that means any information she provides you would be considered to meet a higher bar of credibility, as such, to put it one way, to begin with, and particularly because of what the role of her office is in regards to legally vulnerable adults and court proceedings in the ACT. Does that make sense? Okay, so you don't even need to tell me how difficult or whether that'll be possible yet, but yeah, that's the other thing. Okay, I will write to the registrar about the date. If they aren't responsive on that, then I will follow up with you last week as to how that might be better tackled. Okay. And in the meantime, I'll leave you to follow up the video footage from the bail hearing, or at least the audio, whatever you can get from it and from the police, and contacting Courtney, and that probably gives you enough at the moment then. Cool. Thank you for taking my call again. Okay. Have a good weekend.